I never read the David Morrison memo, to my recollection. I got briefed on the contents, which was basically that foreign interference was lower than expected, and the elections were free and fair in 2019. Those were the top-level conclusions that I was briefed on within days or weeks of the end of the 2019 election.
Well, that is what we heard certainly last week when the Prime Minister was testifying at the inquiry he did not want to call. He didn't see the memos. No one had showed them to him, right? That's not what the head of Canada's intelligence agency said, David Vigneault, when he was actually called back to testify on Friday and kind of, you know, clear things up, because it wasn't clear. Either the Prime Minister was told and the Prime Minister's office was told, or they weren't. And those who were testifying, certainly in the Prime Minister's office and the staff and the lawyers and all that, were saying, we didn't really see stuff. And what we did see, we didn't see it rising to the level of threat. And yet David Vigneault, the head of the intelligence agency, saying, no, he made numerous stark warnings of the threats. Here he is.
This is something that I have absolutely said a number of times, again, in public and in private. I can say with confidence that this is something that has been conveyed to the government, to ministers, the Prime Minister.
There you go. Who said what and when? You got Trudeau's senior staff saying spy chief didn't specifically mention anything that they should know about, but the guy's saying, no, I did. You knew. So what do we take away from this? There's a whole bunch of stuff, because now that part of the inquiry is over, we wait for the report, but certainly we learned a lot last week. Not very pretty in the last couple of weeks, and that is we've got a big interference problem and a big, you know, problem in, you know, bad actors getting into the nominations and playing with essentially our democracy. Charles Burton, senior fellow at McDonald Laurier Institute, also a former counselor over at the Canadian Embassy in Beijing. He joins us now. Good to have you, Charles. It's been a while.
It's great to speak with you, Alex. I'm not actually at McDonald Laurier anymore. Okay. I'm a senior fellow at Synopsis.
I'll update my notebook. All right. Well, good. Well, you've worked with all the good ones, so it doesn't change your intelligence any which way for me. What'd you make of what we heard? Certainly, you heard the staff and the Prime Minister testifying, but then David Vigneault coming in on Friday. What'd you make of that? What did you parse from it?
Well, I parsed from it that Mr. Vigneault is pretty credible, and Jeremy Broadhurst, the Prime Minister's staffer, and Katie Telford seem to be not so credible to me. I mean, essentially, when the commission was able to show some redacted versions of, I think, three of the briefings of the 34 that CSIS has given to the center of government, to the Prime Minister's office and the Prime Minister, you know, they said, well, those notes, you know, which we had assumed if it said note for briefing to Prime Minister, that someone would have said that stuff to the Prime Minister. Mr. Broadhurst said, no, I've never heard this before, you know, and the Prime Minister said the same sort of thing. But I'd heard it before, because as Mr. Vigneault points out, he's made several public statements, and including in giving evidence to the Special Committee on Canada-China Relations and other committees of Parliament. So the idea that, as the document said, that China had been clandestinely and deceptively interfering in the 2019 and 2021 elections, seems that everybody but the Prime Minister seems to have got that message, and Mr. Vigneault's many times stated formula that this is a low-risk, high-reward endeavor for China, that it presents an existential threat to our democracy, and that it will persist unless action is taken and we impose costs and implement legislation. So, you know, the CSIS stance is pretty clear, and one understands, given the Prime Minister and his staff's response, why someone within our intelligence apparatus decided to take enormous and extraordinary risks of leaking secret documents to Global News and the Globe and Mail.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's hard to believe that a leader of a G7 wouldn't read their briefing, right? I mean, we've seen it before in what did you know when, but he was so categorical, the Prime Minister, back when Sam Cooper did the initial reporting of, nope, not true, nothing happened. And then it became, well, it's a little bit of interference. And then it was like, well, I didn't see and I wasn't told, you know. And then he's found his narrative. It's intelligence. It can kind of be You can take from it what you want. And they didn't take it as, well, we've got a big problem, you know, interfering with the election. Whereas you've got intelligence people saying, well, we did warn you. And so, you know, what does it tell you that we have a prime minister who doesn't read intelligence briefings, but then, you know, we've got politicians parsing the facts of what they want for political, whatever works for them best politically. And I'm not saying he's the only other government to do that, but it's, you know, either we have bad intelligence services or we've got, you know, world leaders that are not reading what they're supposed to read and taking them seriously.
Yeah, or hearing what they've been briefed on. Prime Minister repeated again that he reads everything that comes across his desk, which is what Katie Telford had testified in Parliament a few months back. But then in the commission, he said, if you want me to really get something, give me an oral briefing. But then he said, I didn't get that oral briefing. And then he said, you know, they have to assess intelligence and they don't necessarily trust everything that they hear from CSIS. Well, I mean, that was a pretty extraordinary statement. I mean, there's sort of two aspects, as you say. If he feels that CSIS is providing him with defective information, then why doesn't he do something about it and get in a new director who would, you know, do the job better? And secondly, for our Five Eyes partners and other like-minded countries we share intelligence to, is the Prime Minister sending out a signal that Canadian assessments by the Canadian Security Intelligence Service are no good, and therefore you shouldn't take them at face value and ought to, I don't know, figure it out yourself? I mean, I really don't know when the Prime Minister said he had to, you know, think it over and decide whether he was going to believe what CSIS says or not. On what basis does he do that? I mean, is it a Ouija board? If the Prime Minister is not a professional intelligence officer and we have these professionals providing this information, and, you know, if I'm told something by my head of my Canadian Security Intelligence Service, I think I would say, my God, thank you very much for the information, and then proceed to act. In the case of our government, they didn't thank them for the information. They said they didn't get the information. If they did get the information, they wouldn't have believed it. And they're not going to do a single thing different before the next election in 2025.
Let's hope Justice Hoga can parse through the gray area, because there's plenty of it. But you know, to your point, you know, the Prime Minister didn't want this inquiry. They've got it. And we're only hearing the stuff that they're releasing. So imagine what we're not hearing about. But the other area that is obviously so problematic is the nominations area, where, you know, apparently busloads. And I know busloads will go in and people will go in groups and vote and try to get their preferred candidate in. But, you know, when we've got obvious, you know, busloads of international students and all these, you know, other things coming to light by CSIS warning, and none of it's taken seriously. I mean, I would say take the whole nomination process of all the parties and redo it, because there's no checks and balances. The Conservatives have some certain rules in, but by and large, Charles is not really watched. And I think, you know, there's a lot of cancer getting in that way.
I mean, it's completely insane. Buses full of non-Canadian teenagers, some of them with fake documents ostensibly provided by the Chinese consulate, claiming residency in Don Valley North when they didn't even live there. And they can determine who will be the Liberal Party candidate in a safe seat. In other words, those, you know, 14 and above teenagers from a Chinese college are able to decide who's likely to become a member of parliament of a G7 nation.
Right.
And that school that they came from, the New Orient International College, does not only have, oversight board involving Michael Chan, who, you know, is another person involved in this inquiry, but it also has its own branch of the Chinese Communist Party in the school, because it's a Chinese institution. The Xin Dongfang, the New Orient, is something that exists inside China. So, you know, the idea that nobody in government is saying, well, we really need to initiate legislation to prevent this from happening next time, just is very troubling. And people in the Liberal Party have essentially said, well, those are our rules, and it would be very hard to change them. And the implication being that the next election, the New Orient International College teenagers can be bussed over there, even though they're not Canadian citizens, and vote for a candidate that has been proposed to them by the Chinese consulate, that according to reports, and, you know, this will all come out when Justice Oh does it. It's only information that we have, but which, according to reports, they were directed by the Chinese consulate as to who to vote for.
Yeah. Well, if it's based on performance, I think the Chinese government's likely very pleased with what they saw the last couple of weeks. They, but we should not be. We'll talk again, Charles. I appreciate your time.
It's great to speak with you again. Take care.
Thank you. Charles Burton joining us here to go through that. And so that part of the inquiry now, chapter two, where we get all the evidence kind of laid out, that now we wait for the report that comes, I think, by May or June. But what's it going to change? We're learning a lot of stuff, but it's clear that politicians, they'll take what they need or want from these reports. And, do you have any trust in the system that they won't continue?
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.